I'm Reinhard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central episode 175 for the extra long weekend starting 27 April 2017.
Woohoo! Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, is ADSL dying?
Also this week, MTN achieves 400 megabit per second LTE. Rumors about the next iPhone. Jeff Bezos may soon be the world's richest man. Take that, Bill Gates.
Cha-ching.
The NASDAQ cracks 6,000. And of course, those two stories are linked.
Time to lift the curtains on another podcast.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Reinhard?
How's it, Duncan?
Recording in Randburg at the offices of NavWorld today for a change.
Yeah, a little studio we're trying to build here. Welcome, Duncan. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a bit of change of scenery. let's talk about this week. It's, of course, another compressed week. There's so many holidays at the moment. It's crazy. I don't know how you're coping, Reinhard.
No, it's terrible. It doesn't work well for productivity at all.
The one plus side of it is that it lets you catch up on your email and perhaps some of the admin that was backing up.
Yeah. Catching up on those podcasts I've been wanting to listen to as well.
Indeed. But speaking of podcasts, we've been doing lots of interesting interviews lately. Adriana Marais of Mars One. We're going to be posting a video of that soon. If you haven't heard the audio, check out the video of that. A bit of an experimentation for us to branch into video. We're not going to do it wholesale yet, but we're experimenting with it and may look to do video podcasts at some point in the future.
Yeah, it works well with the right subjects.
Indeed. I agree. So lots of interesting podcasts. Yesterday I had a fascinating chat with Ronnie Apteker, who is the co-founder of Internet Solutions. Ronnie now working for a company called Thinxt, started by an information security expert called Haroon Mir. Very nice chat with Ronnie about the new movie he's involved in called Beyond the River. It's nice. A fantastic movie. I went to the premiere last week. Go see it. It's brilliant. It's about the Doozy Canoe Marathon and two canoeists, a black guy and a white guy, who team up against the odds and take on the challenge of winning gold at the Doozy Canoe Marathon. And it's brilliantly shot. You'll love it because they make extensive use of drone footage over the Valley of a Thousand Hills in KZN.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful cinematography, and the score is also fantastic.
And it's based on an original story, I take it.
It's inspired by true events. So there is some creative license in the movie. For example, in the movie, the guys, and I'm not giving away a spoiler here, but this guy's son dies, and that didn't happen in real life. So they've dramatized it. But it's inspired by a true story. These two guys did exist, and they did get together, and they did go and win gold at the Doozy.
Oh, nice.
And it's one of the best South African movies I've seen. So go check it out.
You definitely need to go check it out.
Yeah, it opened on the cinema circuit yesterday, so I'm sure it'll be around on the circuit for a few weeks at least. But let's talk about tech news and...
And the quiz.
Oh, I always forget. Thank you. What did I do with Usher? Let's do the quiz. Do you want to start?
Yeah, let me do that. Elon Musk last year paid over at least how much to the U.S. government in personal income taxes? And we're looking for a dollar figure year to the nearest $100 million.
That's a big tax bill. Researchers from which South African organization helped discover a strange new planet 320 light years from Earth? That's really just next door, that has the same density as styrofoam.
Oh, wow.
And for a bonus point, what is the planet called?
Interesting stuff. The third question, which international organization said it will launch biometric fingerprint-based bank card in South Africa commercially this year?
Fourth question, Vodacom has pushed out the planned listing of its Tanzanian subsidiary by up to 3 weeks, or actually by 3 weeks, to the 11th of May. Why has it done that?
And the fifth question, the television adaptation of which Neil Gaiman novel will go live on Amazon Prime Video in South Africa on 1 May?
Can't wait to see it.
It's going to be a good one.
I love the novel. So we can now get on to the news. Thanks, Reinhard. We'll get to the answers to that quiz at the end of today's show. Speaking of podcasts, I had a great interview with Jacques Dutoit last week. It was last week. In fact, we did a lot of podcasts last week.
Neil
Schumann, the CEO of Vumatel. We had Adriana Marais, who's now at SAP and, of course, is part of the Mars One project. And Jacques Dutoit, who is the CEO of Vox Telecom. Very interesting discussion about ADSL and fiber in South Africa. And something that Jacques said I thought was very interesting. I said, you know, what happens in 5 or 10 years? Is ADSL still around? Looked at me and said, 5 years? Gone. Fiber will kill it. He may be being a little bit ambitious, I think, with a five-year prediction. Mm. But certainly the fiber is being rolled out at such a rate now that I suspect that the bulk of ADSL could be gone in 5 years' time. I mean, Vumatel has basically connected up every house now in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg within the circle. And they've done that in, 2 years?
Yeah.
So that's been very rapid rollout. They're now going to focus on Cape Town and Durban, and out also the East Rand and West Rand. Mm-hmm. But that's rapid deployment. At that sort of pace, there's a good argument to be made that within 5 years, the bulk of the DSL base would be gone. And that would certainly explain why OpenServe, which is the telecom wholesale subsidiary, has become so aggressive at rolling out fiber just in the last little while. They didn't wait long. I mean, Neil Schoeman said to me he expected them to take a bit longer than they did to react to Vumatel's presence in the market, but they reacted pretty quickly, announcing a fiber rollout of their own. Where I live, Vumatel deployed infrastructure last year, earlier this year even, and now OpenServe is trenching the streets in my suburb. So they're duplicating Vumatel's infrastructure.
We've had similar stuff happen in our suburb, and you have to ask the question, why are the guys replicating trenching? I mean, they destroy the pavements every single time.
It's great for consumers. I mean, if you're not a fiber advocate like we are, I suppose you get really annoyed at this sort of thing. But, I mean, it's great to have an alternative if one of them falls over at some point in the future.
But you'd think they use one infrastructure, put a pipe, a big concrete pipe down and put your strands inside, you know, individual piping. That's what I thought they would do. But, like I said, we also have MTN trenching in our neighborhood. For some reason, we haven't heard anything other than...
It is odd. I mean, why surely it would make sense for Vumatel to lease space in its ducts to...
Yeah, we're not talking about the actual fiber that they're sharing. It's the ducting.
So we've got this duplication going on now where parts of South Africa are crying out for broadband. There's now this duplication happening. And where this duplication is happening, it makes the business case very much harder. It's, you know, if you're the second player coming into a suburb like Telkom is in my suburb, I think there is a first mover advantage for Vumatel, you know, having come there, because they're certainly the early adopters. Like myself, would sign up the moment it's available, which is what I did. You know, I suppose there'll be a long tail of consumers who are on DSL, perhaps even don't even realize there's fiber available yet, or don't see the need to switch necessarily, or they're not big users of the internet, so they're on iBurst connections, for example, or they use LTE as an option. I suppose that market is a potential fiber market down the line as they realize the benefits of Netflix and streaming and all the rest of it. But one does have to wonder whether this duplication actually makes sense. I don't think it's really happened in other markets around the world that I'm aware of.
Not at this rate in these dense areas where, I mean, one installation is more than sufficient. Mm-hmm. You really don't need. I mean, I guess there's other infrastructure requirements like base stations or cell phone towers, that kind of thing. But still, I mean, trenching in certain suburbs where I've seen them for a second time, it seems like a waste of time.
So 5 years, perhaps he's right. Perhaps it's gone in 5 years. I think there'll be holdouts. I think there'll be pockets here and there where copper, you know, slim place where the fiber guys just haven't gone. Telkom's DSL network is quite extensive, especially if you go into the smaller towns. I mean, many of the smaller towns have DSL, and I can't see Vumatel getting to all those towns necessarily over the next 5 years.
But are those the big money generating? Don't use that much bandwidth or that probably much telephone call. They don't make that much telephone calls to actually warrant or justify these massive.
And a lot of those small towns are served by wireless providers, wireless internet service providers that used unlicensed spectrum, Wi-Fi spectrum, are quite big in those towns. I think in part because the DSL is so terrible. If it's available, it's really slow. So wireless guys have come in and provided an alternative. Neil Schoeman said that in the podcast that, they're focusing on the big metros. They're not interested in going to the small towns in the countryside. Doesn't make sense for them. They're going to reach a point where they're finished. Then the question becomes, what do they do next? Do they get into services? Do they become an ISP in their own right and compete with the guys who are selling services on their network? He denied that. He said, that's not in our plan. What he did hint at, which I thought was very interesting, was that he said that, you know, we've got all this fiber infrastructure across Johannesburg. Why don't we start putting up Wi-Fi hotspots all over the place?
Oh, that's a fantastic idea.
And it's relatively trivial for them to do because they've got all this, the infrastructure's there. They just need to put Wi-Fi on top of it. So what do? You put up a pole and put Wi-Fi on top. Maybe you sell a cheaper service. You know, Wi-Fi. You can do some interesting things with Wi-Fi at the street level. You can actually provide in-home service. I'm not sure what the business model would be, what they're thinking, but he dropped a very big hint that's something that they're looking at doing next. But the wireless, the mobile guys aren't standing still, of course, while this is happening.
Yeah.
MTN announcing last week that they are testing, now let me just find the story, they're testing something called LTE license assisted access at a test site in Pretoria. This is an evolution of LTEU or LTE unlicensed. It uses the Wi-Fi bands. They're using 40 megahertz of spectrum in the unlicensed 5 gigahertz band and paired that with 15 megahertz of spectrum in the licensed 2.1 gigahertz band. And they've put up a site in Pretoria and they've achieved a peak downlink throughput of over 400 megabits a second.
Oh, that's not bad for a little cell phone connection.
That's pretty good.
What's the latency on that, did they say?
They didn't mention latency, no. You know, LTE latency is very good, so I'm sure it was
under 10 milliseconds.
Probably, think, yeah. My guess is they didn't even say where they were doing this, but my guess it would be a very controlled environment, like in a shopping center, probably with one high site. What's interesting about this technology is apparently, you know, compared to the LTE, the original LTEU technology, is this has got all sorts of clever techniques built into it to prevent interference with people already in that band. So if it detects that there's, you know, the spectrum is already being used for something else, like a Wi-Fi device, it will avoid using that while the Wi-Fi is using it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a pity they didn't say where. I guess we would have been a bunch of geeks sitting around there downloading.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you're going to need a special device to be able to test this. I don't even know if there's a smartphone in the market. Maybe the Galaxy S8 supports it. I'm not sure. We know that the S8 is the first phone in the market to support Category 16 LTE, which is gigabit class LTE.
Yeah.
Of course, that's in theory only.
Yeah.
You won't get that in the real world. And certainly, you won't get that in South Africa right now. I'm sure one of the operators, or both MTN and Vodacom, maybe even Cell C, we'll put up a test site at some point just to demonstrate gigabit class LTE, but you'll probably be standing right next to the base station and your head will probably be warming up.
free breakfast. I'm less excited about this because of fiber. I think fiber has kind of evened out that desperation for the true high-speed connectivity.
Yeah.
I'm happy with average 10, 14 mega LTE these days.
On mobile, you don't need anything else, actually. Mm. I mean, as long as you can stream an HD video to your phone, that's all you really need.
I guess live streaming now becoming a big thing. I would love to, you know, that obviously for me, but LTE is more than sufficient for that.
Yeah.
With a 10 meg connection,
yes,
even at a mediocre site.
But you're not going to watch Netflix on an LTE connection. It's too expensive.
I do it at home or do it at the office or put it on my phone. Yeah. Mm. And then you're using Wi-Fi over your own fiber.
Yeah, exactly. There's this race amongst the mobile operators to say, you know, we've got the fastest network, you know, look what we're doing, look how cool we are. But, you know, what's the point, actually? Especially if, you know, you're a prepaid user paying 1 rand or 2 rand a megabyte for data. I mean, you'll burn through thousands of rands in a matter of seconds.
Yeah, that LTE is not gonna benefit you very much.
It's cool that the technology is getting to this point and that the operators are obviously keen to outdo each other.
Yeah.
These releases come out regularly from Vodacom and MTN. I'm actually surprised Vodacom didn't put out a follow-up release to this because they did when the LTEU was initially announced by MTN. But they're always trying to outdo each other. We're the first to do this. We're the first to do that.
Yeah. I'm happy as long as it's rolled down and we get better service at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I like it if they experiment.
At the end of the day, though, they need more spectrum because they actually can't do a lot of this stuff. While the government is not allocating access to more spectrum. If they had the digital dividend, if they had 2.6 gigahertz, they'd actually be able to deliver much better speeds to South African consumers, and that's a fact. The regulatory environment is keeping our network slow. And it's going to start costing us, unfortunately, as a country. So I don't know if you've seen these rumors. Bloomberg had a great story which we carried last week on the next iPhone. They had some great insights into what's coming. So it looks like they're going to be three models this time around, and only the top end model is going to have the huge overhaul.
Yes.
So the next two models down presumably will be cheaper devices, probably modeled quite similarly
to the current
iPhone 7. Yeah. Whereas the flagship device, I'm imagining, is going to look a lot more like the Galaxy S8.
Yeah. I think that see-through phone that's been rumored, I think from last year already, maybe not so much a see-through phone as what it is, clever optical technology with a wraparound kind of screen to give you the illusion, especially when using augmented reality, that you are looking at a see-through device.
Yeah, we're definitely heading towards, you're seeing it now with the LG G6 in front of you there, Rechot. The Galaxy S8 goes even further, but we're certainly going to this point where the screen is takes up most of the front of the device and the bezel really just about all but disappears. I think Samsung has been the most aggressive in that regard with that, what they call infinity display, that real edge-to-edge curved glass. And I would expect Apple to do the same thing. If they don't, I was sitting at a breakfast the other morning, and the chap next to me had an S8 Plus, which, despite its 6.2-inch screen size, is actually remarkably comfortable in the hand.
Oh, really?
So he had an iPhone 7 Plus and a Galaxy S8 Plus next to each other on the table. The iPhone 7 Plus looked prehistoric in comparison. It looked like a phone from 10 years ago. It was chalk and cheese between these two. I mean, the S8,
design, look and feel.
The look and feel and the design of this thing. I mean, the S8 looked futuristic. The iPhone looked dated and old. So Apple has to radically change the iPhone this year. If they don't, then they've got a problem. But they will. I think it's.
I think these rumors, the rumors have been too far and widespread, talking about much of the same kind of direction that Apple's heading in. I think we are. Well, I've got no doubt that we are going to see this revolution. But I'm glad that they're keeping two other models kind of more aligned with the older device, not to alienate the customer base again after the 2.5mm audio jack debacle.
You can be sure that's not coming back.
Yeah.
There was a lot of rumor that Samsung was going to ditch the analog audio jack on the S8, and I was very pleased at the launch to see it was still there.
I mean, I was thinking about the audio jack the other day because I had another conversation with a friend about, you know, the removal thereof, and I realized again, I plugged 3.5mm into my phone every day this week doing something, whether it's music or a conference call that I wanted to do or something, or use an external peripheral for my iPhone.
You don't want to have to use an external peripheral. I mean, it's something that gets lost. It goes against the design ethos that Steve Jobs instilled at Apple.
Exactly.
You're not supposed to carry hundreds of dongles around in a bag.
A good example of that and something that irks me every day is the network adapter for these MacBooks. So it's external dongle. Now, it's not the biggest problem. It's a nice slick dongle.
Yes.
But it is a pain in the butt to have to carry this thing around. Now, if I take my notebook somewhere, I don't have it with me. So if I do have an opportunity to plug in somewhere, if I need to, I don't have that.
And is that the new? That's not the new MacBook.
No, this is a 2015.
2015.
Model.
Okay. So they've got even more controversial with the new ones, of course.
Yes.
And the MacBook, which only has one port for everything.
Well, it's a love-hate relationship.
It's an iPad, basically. It's an iPad with a keyboard.
Oh, it's terrible.
So, we'll have to wait till September to find out what Apple's got up its sleeve, although in reality it'll have leaked by then. All these phones leak well ahead of time.
Yeah, from the manufacturing plants. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I think Apple has always been in a good position to kind of push the envelope and, for good or bad, you know, be a little bit controversial. I would love to see what they can bring to the table in a consumer AR device.
And what's going to be interesting is that they need to avoid being accused of copying Samsung. Samsung has, in terms of design, Samsung is first to market with this radically changed device. If their device looks very similar to the S8, then they're going to open themselves up to accusations that they've become nothing but a follower. And I'm sure that'll be top of mind. So it'll be interesting to see what this thing looks like, because there's not all that much you can do that's, I mean, exactly. Edge to
edge.
That's
why so many photos phones look like the iPhones, because, you know, the button at the bottom design, there's only so many ways you can do it.
Some Android manufacturers do deliberately copy the design ethos of the iPhone. I think Huawei in particular, you'll see. Look at our Huawei phones. Yeah. They've got a lot of iPhone brand design elements in them. And they're not, it's not only Huawei. Other Android manufacturers do the same thing. Samsung has, I think, broken with that now solidly.
Yeah, they've managed to break away from that that design ethos that you're talking about on the iPhone. They managed to do it quite successfully, I think. But there's only so many ways you can shape a block, I guess. There's only so many ways you can wrap glass around a piece of metal.
Indeed. The smartphone industry has become very mature. But you're right. It's going to be interesting to see what they're going to do in augmented reality, because they've been hinting very big that something's coming. I can't imagine what it is, though. You know, I don't think people are going to wear... are they going to do glasses? Google Glass was a failure.
I don't think they will go there. I think their device, their philosophy, or the plan with their devices is to have that augmented reality on your device. So when you hold up your device in front of you, it becomes that glass that you don't have to wear on your face. I'm sure there will be, down the line, there will be peripherals and there will be something you put on your face. I'm not against that. Obviously, Google Glass wasn't the best example of how to do such a thing. It was big and bulky. But, I mean, you can do it. There's scientists out there that put this technology on contact lenses. And that shows you what will happen when you put something on that small in front of your eyesight to give you that augmented reality effect. But until that point, iPhone will be using the device to mimic that. And I think I don't know how they would be able to do it or how they're going to be doing it. But from what I've seen in the AR world, there's some really interesting applications for existing internet-based services or apps.
We'll know in September.
Can't wait.
Anyway, we need to take a commercial break. We'll be back in a second.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox Fiber. Now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Oh, welcome back to the show. How's it, Rehot?
How's it, Duncan?
So, a lot of big tech companies in the US reporting results this week, among them Microsoft, Amazon, I'm forgetting some names now. Apple's not reporting this week. Certainly Amazon, Microsoft, and one or two other big ones. But the Amazon numbers, really, really interesting. Of course, Google, Alphabet reporting week as well. Also with very good numbers, very strong growth in mobile advertising, which is interesting. And Microsoft missing their numbers slightly. And their share price is taking a little bit of a knock because of that, mainly on the back of poor sales of Surface devices, which is interesting, which prompted me, of course, to post a story with the headline, Microsoft slips on Surface.
yeah, you just had to go there.
I had to go there, absolutely. it was just waiting to be done. But Amazon putting out absolutely mind-blowing results this week. I mean, that company is just going from strength to strength. I think we, Rachel said on this podcast a couple of weeks ago that they could be the first company in history to a $1 trillion market cap. After-hours trading, markets haven't opened up in the U.S. just yet, but in after-hours trading on Thursday evening, their market cap surged up to about $470 billion. So closing in on the $500 billion mark and getting closer to Microsoft's market valuation. I think the only companies ahead of them are Microsoft, Google, and Apple. Google's or Alphabet's share price also surging in after-hours trading, putting them on a market cap, I think, of around 660 or 670 billion US. Apple's sitting up at about 750, so $750 billion. You don't even want to convert that into rand.
No, that's
it's about 10 trillion, 11 trillion. But on the back of this, Jeff Bezos is now firmly entrenched as the second richest person in the world and is now only, and I use the word only in inverted commas, $5 billion behind Bill Gates. So one more good quarter from Amazon, and there's a very real chance, or just a share price moving up in the next few days on the basis of the strong results from Amazon, there's a very good chance that Jeff Bezos is going to overtake Bill Gates to become the richest person on the planet.
Who would have thought Amazon a few years ago, a decade ago?
Yeah.
Told me Amazon
a retailer.
Would have been this, yeah.
I mean, the company that sells you toilet paper is now the richest, its founder is going to be one of the richest people on the planet. But of course, Amazon is more than just retail now. It's Amazon Web Services, which is an absolutely massive cloud computing business. The retail side is also massive. They're expanding around the world now. Please come to South Africa.
Yes.
And, of course, Jeff Bezos is a big investor, and he takes $1 billion out of Amazon every year for Blue Origin, which is his company, which is competing directly head-on with Elon Musk, another billionaire, to
poison their toys, eh?
To get into space. Indeed, who's got the biggest rocket? And you see them posing in front of these rockets, you just wonder. But they're having fun, isn't it?
You think there's a WhatsApp group where all these rich guys are chatting, saying, how are my rockets up in the air first?
Well, no, there is. It's called Twitter, because Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos had a go at each other on Twitter last year sometime about their rocket plans. So big egos at play, big rockets, lots of money.
Oh, man.
They're having fun, no doubt about it. But it's fascinating to watch anyway. This race, this new race for space. Who's going to be the first to Mars?
I'm loving this renewed love and passion for getting up into space again. I mean, it felt like there was a lull for many decades around it, you know.
After the moon.
And especially now with the privatization of that, or at least private companies going into space as opposed to governments.
Yes, yes.
Very excited.
And of course, we had that podcast with Adriana Maria just a couple of weeks ago. And if you haven't listened to that podcast yet, do go and listen to it. Or look out for the video that we're going to be posting in the next couple of days. It's a fascinating discussion about Mars One and Adriana's plan to get on a rocket and never come back.
Sure, that's scary and very exciting at the same time.
I'm not sure I would do it if I had the opportunity. Would you? Would you go to Mars and never come back?
No, I don't think I'm that inclined.
No, me neither.
But I love the concept.
I love the idea.
I love the idea thereof. I think, I mean, we've seen it so many times in Hollywood movies, and they end in so many various ways, but
It's the only way
for humans to expand, you know. Somebody has to take that leap and not come back.
Yeah.
Like the captain, the sea captains that went out in the ocean many centuries ago.
Yes.
You know, do you come back? Don't you come back? Where do you go? Do you fall off that cliff at the edge of the earth?
Eaten by a sea monster. It's the same thing. It's new age of and Adriana, if she goes, her name will be immortalized in history.
Oh, yeah. I was fascinated by again, a reason to go listen to that podcast, but the TV production around that was quite a fascinating angle to it as well, you know. This is going to be reality TV like we've never seen before.
Yeah.
It's going to bring it so close to everybody. We're going to look at these people as those frontiers, those spacemen.
Yes.
And they take our civilization to another planet.
Yeah. If it happens, of course.
If it happens,
They have to raise a lot of money.
I should ask Jeff. He might have a few. Oh, no, that's a competitive brand.
So Jeff Bezos, very, very close to overtaking Bill Gates as the richest person on the planet and in the known universe. And, of course, all of this is on the back of a stock market in the U.S. that is just going from strength to strength. In fact, since Donald Trump was elected as U.S. president, the stock markets have risen by about 20%. I think on the back of the expectation that the Republican administration in the U.S. is going to be it's going to be a lot less red tape, a lot less regulation, a lot less government involvement in business. So there's been a strong rally in that time, despite the controversial things that Mr. Trump often says. And the NASDAQ, which is the tech-heavy stock exchange based in New York, Went through 6,000 points this week for the first time. And it was not long after going through 5,000 points. Of course, it's had a very long time getting there because back in, you recall back in 2000, at the height of the dot-com bubble, the Nasdaq briefly peaked over 5,000 points. And it took 16 or 17 years to get back to 5,000 points. So the if you bought shares in March 2000 at the peak of the dot-com bubble, it would have taken you a very long time to get your money back. But it's back there, and just in a very short period of time, it's gone from NASDAQ 5,000 to NASDAQ 6,000. And I guess the sky is the proverbial limit. And who knows, maybe we'll have NASDAQ 7,000 by this time next year. And from I've been reading a lot of analysts on whether the market is overheating, and the sort of general view is no, that this is actually based on fundamentals, that that these valuations we're seeing in the market, while they are fully priced, it's not the dot-com bubble again. This thing isn't going to necessarily crash. There's solid underpinnings here. I mean, the numbers we're seeing out of companies like Alphabet and Microsoft and Facebook and Apple, etc., actually would appear to justify the valuations that are being attached to these companies. So the question is it time to buy?
Good question.
So our winner this week, moving rapidly along to our features, regular features, is Jeff Bezos for that incredible wealth, now over $80 billion personal wealth. So Jeff Bezos is our winner this week, and we don't actually have a loser this week, so we'll leave that segment. We'll put our thinking caps on, and we'll come back with a loser for our winner and loser segment in our podcast next week. Rechard, I'm looking at the show notes, and I see that there's a blank space next
blank
to your
pick. Blank space next to my pick.
Do you have one?
It's because I haven't put it in yet, Duncan. I kept it secret.
I can't wait to hear what it
is. So I've got some friends visiting and from overseas, and the guy's a DJ. And we've been chatting a bit about music and music online and where do you save your mixes and that kind of thing. And he introduced me to a very cool online service, and I've been loving it. I've been listening to it for the last 2 days, almost nonstop. Mm-hmm. It's similar to something that you'd expect from SoundCloud, but if you've been following what happened with SoundCloud over the last few years, they've really been nailed with copyright notices, and they've been very hard on their user community with that as well. For many years, SoundCloud was a platform where you could upload, or as a DJ, upload mix sessions with copyright music in it, because you're obviously not distributing the song on its own as a separate. So that kind of has been falling away on SoundCloud. So another cloud-based service called MixCloud has kind of taken in the filling in that gap, and
I've
a lot of DJs are using it apparently. And I've been going through it kind of to see who's on there, and everybody has got an account on there in terms of musician and DJ. Mixcloud.com, and there's some really good content on there. I mean, it depends on your music taste, I guess. You can find anything from soulful jazz to the hardest hip hop or house or any of those kind of electronic styles. But yeah, great music, really good app. I mean, it's the kind of thing, I often hate curating my own music because I just want to put something on and listen to it. Online radio is great for that. Symphy and iTunes Music can stream that kind of thing too, but it's nice to have content mostly generated by DJs.
Okay.
Because I'm a DJ at heart too. I used to do it many years ago, so I do appreciate the mixes. And I enjoy listening to them. So MixCloud, well worth checking out if you're into not just electronic music, but yeah, DJ-fied music, if I can put it like that.
Do you pay for the app?
This is a free service because you're just streaming audio. It's like SoundCloud. So they are paid for versions if you are a producer.
Okay.
But as a user, you get the audio for free.
Okay. And the music that gets played, do the artists get compensated?
I don't know. I don't know how they work in terms of royalties. I kind of don't think so because I can't see the monetization. There are ads on the site.
Okay.
If you go and look via the website. But I've only been listening to it for about 2 days now.
So if you listen to it, is there advertising in the streams as well?
No. The streams are pure music.
Okay.
There's advertisements on the site. But nothing in between. So it's exactly like SoundCloud. You know, you can listen to any music, you can listen to playlists, you can listen to, you can make your own playlists.
This is cool. I'm going to go check it out.
Yeah, well worth
it. I'll see if there's progressive rock on here, because that's my...
There must be. I've been impressed with the range range of music that I found on here.
Okay.
Well worth
it. Yeah, I see there's quite a selection here under Discover Music Shows. Rock, indie, house, hip-hop, garage, rap, reggae, R&B, soul, funk, deep house, classical, chill out, beats, bass, ambient, pop, tech house, world, trap, trance, techno, etc., etc. So... it looks like there's a option for just about any musical taste. I'm definitely going to go have a look at that. I'll download the app on my phone right after this podcast. And my pick this week is the new Google Earth for Chrome. I don't know if you've had a chance to have a look at that yet, Rashad.
I did. Is this the one you showed me, or is there a new one after this?
Did I show it to you?
About 2-3 weeks ago.
I don't know. No.
This is a new version.
I was showing you the... I think if I recall correctly, I was showing you the 3D buildings.
You were showing me the app, the software app on your computer.
Okay. This is for Chrome. So if you go to earth.google.com in Chrome, it doesn't seem to work in any other web browsers at the moment, which is interesting. But it's an entirely browser-based version of Google Earth, and they've done some really cool stuff with it. They've made it the interface a lot simpler to use. The app for Windows has always been a bit, and for Mac has always been a bit clunky, I thought. They've really simplified it a lot. They've added a lot of places to discover. There's an I'm feeling lucky button now, like in the search engine, so it'll take you somewhere random on Earth. Of interest, so that you can have a look at it along with photography and all that sort of thing. If you zoom in enough and the street view available, it'll zoom down to street view. I think it did that in the old version as well. But it really is a sleek looking experience now. It's a little bit buggy in places. Chrome did crash a couple of times on the first day I tried it. It seems to have stabilized a bit now. But it's looking really cool and completely browser based. But of course, if you use Windows 10, you can create an app out of it, a Chrome app out of it, and just pop it into your task tray at the bottom of the screen and use it as if it was an app. But Google's done some excellent work with it, simplifying it, and it really looks sexy. The view it starts with now, the outer space view, is really cool because the clouds that you see on the planet's surface are real time.
Oh, really? I've just loaded it up and it looks fantastic. I want to run this on a big screen in my house.
It's beautiful. I run it on my TV. It's fantastic. The cloud patterns you see when you fire it up are actual weather right now. So they've thought of everything. In fact, if you scroll around the Earth, you'll see the Milky Way as well.
Yes.
And the Milky Way is accurate to where it's supposed to be in relation to
this. This is beautiful. another cool app to use with your fiber, right?
Indeed. Yeah, no, the faster your connection, the better.
Oh, yes.
If you're 100 meg fiber, this is the perfect application to showcase it.
And also shows the line, obviously, for where where the sun isn't shining, right? So you can see the dark...
The dark side.
Night sky coming. Oh, that's beautiful.
It's stunning, and they've done a lot of work, including in the South African version, where you zoom in. A lot of the cities in South Africa now have full 3D buildings of every building in the city, including people's houses.
I've noticed some of that. Yes, on the Google Maps.
Yeah, Google Maps is doing it too. Yeah, and that's very, very, very cool. My house is in 3D and my trees and my garden are in 3D.
Really?
It's phenomenal.
I'm going to go do some desktop surfing this weekend.
So that's the new Google Earth for Chrome. It's really cool. You'll ditch the app, I promise you. And those are our picks. All that's left for us to do, Rafat, is to get to the quiz results. Let me kick off with the first question. Elon Musk last year paid over at least how much to the U.S. government in personal income taxes, and we were looking for a dollar figure to the nearest $100 million.
Sure.
And his tax bill was $593 million U.S. dollars minimum.
Wow, that's a big, big chunk of money. The second question, researchers from which South African organization helped discover a strange new planet 320 light years from Earth that has the same density as styrofoam? And for a bonus point, we wanted to know what the planet was called. The answer there, the South African Astronomical Observatory, and the planet was called KELT 11B.
Third question, which international organization said it will launch a biometric fingerprint based bank card in South Africa commercially this year, and they've been running the trial with Absa and Pick and Pay, and the answer is Mastercard.
The fourth question, Vodacom has pushed out the planned listing of its Tanzanian subsidiary by 3 weeks to 11 May. Why? And the answer there, to give investors more time to take part after disappointing take-up in the offer.
And our final question in our quiz, the television adaptation of which Neil Gaiman novel will go live on Amazon Prime Video in South Africa on the 1st of May, and I absolutely cannot wait to see this show. It's called American Gods. And that's our quiz. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Let us know what you like about the show. If there's anything about the show you don't like, tell us what you think about our new Tech Central podcast interview series. We're having great fun with it. We can see from the downloads that it's gaining huge traction, which we're very excited about. If you have any ideas of people you'd like us to interview, drop us a note and we'll try and line them up. Still working on Elon Musk. we're holding thumbs for one day maybe getting him onto a Skype call. But drop us a line and let us know what you think. And that is our show from Richard and myself. Until next time, take care. Ciao.